November 1st, 1950, Pope Pius XII solemnly proclaimed as authentic Catholic teaching the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. In his words, the Immaculate Mother of God, the ever-Virgin Mary, after completing her course of life on earth, was assumed to the glory of heaven, both in body and soul. Now, you might have this reaction to what I just said. 1950? I thought that the church was supposed to be founded in the year 33 by Jesus, not 19 anything. How could we just make up something as dogma 1900 years later? Well, let's just take a few minutes to dispel any misconceptions about what this teaching is, what it's about, and how its solemn proclamation came about, which means that it is infallible, that is, unerring. First thing I'd like to mention is an extremely important theological work by John Henry Cardinal Newman. Newman was an excellent scholar in England in the 1800s, who was especially renowned for his knowledge of the early church fathers, which are the Christian writers of the first four centuries after Jesus' death. In his book entitled An Essay on the Development of Christian Doctrine, he argues, as an Anglican, mind you, not only about the importance of the Pope as someone who can guarantee the authenticity of Christian teaching, much like the necessity of a referee in any competitive sport, and he also argues that the very logic of the incarnation of Christ means that our understanding of his teaching would grow and develop over the centuries. Just as Jesus himself grew in wisdom and stature, as the scriptures say, so too does the Christian mind grow in its understanding of the revelation of God over time. The idea is not that what is later proclaimed as doctrine was absent in God's revelation. Rather, the idea is that it was present, but only in seed form, a form which needed time for human minds to grasp. And that's where tradition and the magisterium enter in, to guide and guarantee the development of Christian thought. Now, we'll have to leave the discussion about the relation between sacred scripture and the magisterium for another time. But I'd like to move into a few of the evidences that we have that back up this dogma of the Assumption of Mary, very briefly. First, we must recognize that there is no contradiction between this teaching and Scripture. But as our readings attest, certain passages hint at the presence of the Virgin Mary in heaven, even now, before the general resurrection. For example, the reading from the book of Revelation speaks of a woman clothed with the sun, and much of what is said about her is applicable to Mary. Secondly, there is no claim to anyone having the bones or relics of the Virgin Mary. Now, as you know, the saints' relics were especially prized in the first centuries of the church, and people everywhere claimed to have bones of so many different saints. So it's particularly curious that this great woman, whom the Gospels praise, would have been excluded from that. The fact that no one claims to have her body or relics, first-class relics of her, points to the fact that there is no body here, but her body is in heaven. Third, the teaching about the Assumption is consistent with all that we know about Mary. Mary was hailed by the angel as full of grace. She was born without the stain of original sin. So why would her body see the corruption of the original sin that she herself was not subject to? As Cardinal Newman said, it was surely fitting, it was becoming that she should be taken up into heaven and not lie in the grave till Christ's second coming, she who had passed a life of sanctity and of miracles such as hers. All the works of God are in a beautiful harmony. They are carried out to the end as they began. Fourth, Mary was the closest follower, and the best imitator of Christ, her son. She was willing to follow him even to the foot of the cross, where nearly all of his friends were nowhere to be found. In that sad hour, a sword pierced her heart, just as had been prophesied. She practically died with her son. But if she shared so perfectly in that most difficult part of Christ's life, why would she not share in his resurrection? Our reading from 2 Corinthians shows that the risen Christ is the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. To say that he is the first implies that there will be more to come. And Mary, in being assumed into heaven, shares in that. As St. Paul says, if we have died with him, as Mary did, we will also live with him. And fifth and finally is the antiquity of the teaching. It is consistent with teachings about Mary that date to the first century, but there are also explicit homilies that speak about her assumption into heaven dating back to the sixth century. Now, finally, I'd like to add a word concerning the purpose of this teaching. Does it really help us to know that Mary has been taken up to heaven, body and soul? Now, the purpose of all the dogmas about Mary are not to show us how different she is than us. The purpose is to show what awaits us. Now, Mary is the prototypical Christian. She's the prototype, the first to believe. And she therefore received early the blessings that we all await. She received them so that we might know what they look like and so that we might more ardently desire them. So following her example of unflinching faith in Jesus Christ, her Son, may we one day be able to share in her praise of God. The Almighty has done great things for me. From this day, all generations shall call me blessed. And finally, he has lifted up the lowly. Speaking of the lowly, I will invite Chad up to share his reflections.